through the first few weeks of this program, what we've been really focusing on are some of the basics that you need to do to take care of yourself, your internal world. This lesson is going to start switching into business, focusing on coming from the internal world to the external world. And in order to do this, we need to understand ourselves and others. That's why on motivation, on goals, once you understand what influences you, the same principles apply to others. What I want to do in this particular lesson here is talk about people and how people work, how relationships work, where it's important. Having some of these basics, and I'm going to warn you, some of this you might go, like, I know this. Or some of this you might say, that's common sense. Having said that, or maybe you'll be wondering, like, why do I need to know this in depth? I'm not going to go crazy into depth, but what I am going to do is challenge you to think in different ways. As you think in different ways, as you have consciously on your mind how people are thinking, how people are interacting, what people need, you are going to be able to relate people to people in a completely different level. So what this is setting you up for is getting ready for influence, getting ready for sales, getting ready for marketing, getting ready for those other aspects of your business that are really important. So I'd really pay attention to this lesson. Now, it's too big a topic, relationships and people, to simply talk about in three videos. So know that I'm going to be giving you much, much more, and it's going to be continuing. It's going to continue to flow out over the next few weeks. Again, keep in mind that the two purposes of this program, in my opinion, are to give you confidence and to help you have more influence in your own life and life of others. That's really what business is about. So if you've got confidence and you can influence other people, you'll be okay most of the time. You still need skills, but you will grow a lot. All right, let's jump into this and I'll fill you in as we go in, okay? So my passion is relationships, improving them consistently. I believe that all of the problems on our planet literally could be solved through strong families and relationships. If you look at problems consistently, they come back down to people not respecting others, people not thinking about others. That's a significant problem consistently. If people were communicating, we'd come to compromise, we would negotiate with each other, and we'd find ways to help. Even if it's something with like the planet or whatever else, we would find ways to do that consistently. We would learn to communicate and deal with interrelational problems and handling of our emotions. It's really what strong families and relationships are about, is learning how to communicate and figure out problems, problem solving. I'm going to tell you, again, my passion. I want to influence the planet and part of that is to help you learn how to best influence other people. Now, these two lessons are going to be titled Relationships, and then the next one's going to be Communication. But listen, focus on both of them, and the most important focus of both of them is influence. How do you influence others? If you're influencing others well, you'll be having a greater impact on the planet and future generations. Having said that, let's make it relevant. Let's make it according to business. How, if you become influential, both as a leader of your employees as well as a good salesperson, a good marketer, you are going to have a great influence on your business and on others in that. I'm not going to force you to have the same passion and purpose as myself, right? I'm going to show you how this matters to you and impacts every area of your life, but specifically business. And really the lesson from this week as well as future weeks is putting something together from the learning and having far more influence on others. So keep that at the top of your brain. It's all about influence here, okay? How do you get others to accept your ideas? Every extremely successful person on this planet is a person of influence. They have learned to influence people around them in various ways. And listen, this isn't always healthy. So I'm going to give you some examples. Some of them are not nice people, okay? My point is not to simply talk about people that we like. It's to show how powerful influence is. So an example, and I'm going to try to use different realms, okay? So for example, Muhammad Ali, both in the ring and out of it, he influenced people. And if you watch his old fights, you watch how he influenced people, he influenced people before he got to the fight. So people were intimidated in the fight. Then he influenced people in the fight and played with their minds. And then he influenced people outside when it came to racial relations, when it came to inspiring people to look at themselves in a different way. And the call on all of us and what our responsibilities are in a country. He was very influential for his day and age. Nelson Mandela, even though he had a really checkered background, he became a person of great influence, not only in his own country, not only with his own like small racial or people group, he influenced far more people than that. There are people, even now, today, even though he's passed away, that consistently point back to him and say how much he influenced them and grew them. Mother Teresa is another huge influencer, at least in the 20th century, where she impacted so many people. Her work was in India, in a small group of people in India, and yet everyone on the planet knows who she is. My kids are young right now, and they've heard about her. They know who she is because of her influence. Because of that, she could. I've listened to people talk about Mother Teresa and how she was a kind of a ball of fire. How if she wanted to move people and really gather, whether it was funds or start a movement towards helping people in some way, how no one would stop her. She was extremely influential. Martin Luther King Jr. is another one. Here's an example of somebody who's less desirous to talk about and yet extremely influential, and that is Hitler. Hitler was extremely influential. Now, again, I'm not saying that this is good. His influence was proper or appropriate or anything. I'm not justifying anything that he did. What I am saying is that because he learned how to influence others, because he understood sales and marketing, because he understood how people operate, because of that, he was able to do incredible things, really. And by incredible, I mean not good. I mean almost unbelievable. The basic definition of incredible, it was incredulous. People were incredulous when they looked at what he was doing. He was trying to take over a planet, and he came close in certain times. If you follow World War II history, if he wouldn't have been so full of himself, he might have done it at different times. It's crazy what he did. So here's the question I'm going to ask: how would it change your life? And I'm going to start with non-business ideas. How would it change your life to have more influence with your kids, or with your partner? How much less stress would there be? What would it be like to be on the same page as your partner? I often hear that a lot of people are the most common breakup in relationships is over money issues. That's not true at all. It's never about money. It's always about communication about money, influence about money. What about your business? If you could influence people better, and I'm not talking about manipulation. Again, I'm going to say this over and over. I'm not talking about manipulation. I'm not talking about forcing people to give you what you want. How could you grow your business if you inspired people? Look at big companies out there and look at what they're doing. So an Apple kind of company, it's not all about the way they've sold their products isn't simply buy our products. We'll play on your emotions to buy our products. Although that does happen. Really, the way they've marketed themselves is a passion for technology in a really unique way, and beauty and simplicity, and those are the things that appeal to people, and they've started a movement that way. What if you could start a movement by influencing others? What if you could better influence yourself with business, money, relationships, physical, mental health? This would affect every area of your business, would it not? Remember the lesson on motivation? These lessons will continue to build on everything we've talked about, okay? In order to influence others, we first need to understand people in general and understand ourselves and be aware of what's going on for ourselves. So how can we deal with people? Dealing with people or influencing people is helpful for any human being interacting with in any way with other human beings. So again, sales, family, friends, relationships. Instead of asking for little things all the time, we can ask for big things. And what that does is two things. One, the other person won't consider everything you ask as small, but consider it big. And secondly, they don't do it because you don't ask them for little things all the time. So, I'm going to break this apart a little bit. One way to influence is by how often or how frequent we ask people something. I'll give you an example of it with my family. My daughter is learning to be a powerful influencer. She's really influential in our family already, even at 9 years old. And she makes mistakes. So one mistake she makes is she's constantly delegating people to do things for her. She's a natural born leader businesswoman, okay? And there are strengths and weaknesses to that. The strength is that she does get a lot of people to do things for her and organizes things. The difficulty with that, and one of her weaknesses currently, is that she does it too often. So she will often get people to do little things for her that actually don't bring a lot of value to her. And therefore kind of runs people runs people dry a little bit, runs the well dry a little bit, so she's going to the well a little too often, and there's no more water left. People start getting frustrated and going, no, I'm not going to do that for you. That's a little, you can do it yourself. One way to influence is simply by asking people less. Now, again, in an influential way, if she asked people less favors, but they were favors that meant a lot to her, she would get more value out of it. Okay, so that's just, again, one quick example of learning how to influence people and in the psychology behind it. Be careful about how often you ask somebody, and be careful what you're asking somebody. What is the application of dealing with people? Good communication is by far the quickest way to reach your goals in any field or area. It'll seem slow, but it'll always end up being better in the end. Okay, what influence is all about, in my opinion, is delayed gratification. So you may not get something instantly, but you'll get more of what you want or need in the end. I'll give an example of influence in my family. So my son is still small enough, and I remember when he was really little, he's really stubborn. He comes right from me in all of his stubbornness. And sometimes he just didn't want to get into the vehicle, even though we wanted or needed to get somewhere. Now, I had a choice in that moment. I could force him to do it. I could manipulate him. I'm bigger and stronger than him. So I could take him and throw him into the vehicle and strap on his seatbelt, and he wouldn't have a choice. I could do that, okay? I could still do that. He's small enough that I can still do that, even if he fought. The problem with that is that short term I meet some like emotional desire to be on time, but long term I sacrifice a relationship with him. And I'm breaking down that relationship slowly. And this happens all the time in business. Sometimes we ask for a quick sale or we ask for whatever from somebody, but long-term we're sacrificing the relationship. What builds business long-term and influence long-term is delayed gratification, giving some other people what they want in small ways, emotional ways, but getting other things from them in the future. So for example, rather than getting a quick sale now, what if you could develop a relationship with somebody and get 10 sales from them next month or 6 months from now? What's better for your business? A lot of people get stuck into the short-term gain story rather than the long-term benefits of influencing people. I can tell you a story of a relative that I have. I've got a relative who gets basically whatever he wants. He travels constantly. He heads up an organization, a worldwide and international organization. It's a charitable organization. But he travels all the time. He's been to, I don't know, 65, 70 countries, something like that. Always getting more. He's probably, I don't know, maybe he's at 90 now. But yeah, I've watched him deal with people. He's excellent at influencing people. And he gets what he wants constantly because of two things. He's persistent and he's respectful. He's persistent and he's respectful. So he can go to, I don't know, a flight attendant or somebody helping at a help desk or whatever. And he'll, even if somebody says, sorry, we don't do that, sir, he will continue at it in a respectful way, finding out what they want and helping them get a little bit of what they want, but keeping at it persistently, respectfully, until he gets what he wants. He never yells at anyone. He never talks down to anyone. And I think people appreciate that in so many ways. I recently read a study of Harvard on Boston poor youth. Now, this was a 75-year study, longest of its kind. What it found was that people who are connected well with others, the social health is strong, they lived longer, they were happier, and they were healthier in every major health measure. So physical health, brain health, heart health, emotion health, mental health, etc. Okay? And it wasn't about quantity of the relationships that people had, it was about the quality of the relationships. So they took poor Boston youth. And this is a while ago. This is early in the 20th century, okay? And they followed them over 75 years and watched how well they connected with others. That's it. That was the only measure that they really focused on as far as the influence that it would have on other things. Remember, it's not about quantity, it's about quality. So some people have a million friends, but they're not close with anyone. Other people have 5 or 10 really close friends. Do you have any friends? Maybe you're in this category where you've got a group of people that you've known each other since junior high, and it's like 5 or 10 of you, and you do everything together still. Your families know each other. That the quality of those relationships, when you've got a few solid relationships like that, do so much for our health. People in unhappy marriages are less healthy than divorced people, typically. Another bunch of studies show this. People in unhappy marriages, you're stuck with somebody you don't enjoy being with, and the quality of the relationship, and this is the important part, the quality of the relationship is really poor. They tend to live less, they tend to be a lot more health problems in a lot of different ways. The attitude of those with wealthy, healthy, connected relationships end up being far stronger and resilient. So people in healthy, connected relationships tend to be have a stronger mindset. They tend to be able to handle problems better. They tend to be able to handle frustrations or other issues around them in miraculous ways almost, and get through things in really unique ways. I want to talk about a study that was done in, I believe it was done in the 50s. It was shortly after the Second World War. And this was a study, a man named Abraham Harlow did a study, and he used rhesus monkeys. So these monkeys are similar to humans in a lot of ways. And easier to study than some of the larger groups of primates. So infants, what he did was he reared infants in isolation. Okay. Maybe I'll explain this a little bit better. So he would take monkeys, and baby monkeys, and right from birth he would give them what they needed physically, meaning food, water, that kind of stuff, warmth. But he would separate them from their mothers. And I mean, listen, like these I'm not condoning this research, okay? It was awful research and what they did to the animals. And yet they learned a ton about these animals because of it. So they exhibited, what happened is when they separated these animals from these babies from their mothers, the babies ended up having huge psychological problems, okay? They exhibited abnormal behavior, and even when they were reintroduced to the community, they would do crazy things. They would do things like pull out their own hair. They would scratch themselves, bite themselves. Those that were isolated the longest had the most difficulty reengaging in the community. They were aggressive. Some of these in isolation for 3 months recovered somewhat, okay? And those ones were less affected than the ones isolated longer, okay, overall. Those in isolation for 12 months never recovered at all. Basically, and I'm going to put this in like really almost crass language, they went nuts and they were never able to recover, okay? They weren't able to socialize with any of the other monkeys. The primary factor for socialization and for community involvement was how well the mother and the baby monkey bonded. There was another part of this research that Harlow did where he would take infants he would take them from their mothers, and then he would put them in a cage. This cage was locked off from the larger monkey community, and it would have two sections joined by a hallway. One section had a wire like a model of a monkey mum, okay? And this wire monkey mum was connected to a milk supply. So this little baby monkey could go over, or infant monkey could go over to this wire mother and get as much milk as they needed. In the other room connected by this hallway, the infant monkey could go and snuggle with a wire monkey, so the same wire monkey, but it was covered with terry cloth. It had a little bit of cloth on it, okay? That's it. It was simply a cloth-covered monkey. I'm going to ask you a question. Where do you think those infant monkeys spent the majority of their time? Ask this of yourself. And I get different answers when I do this for different groups. Here's what would happen. They would only eat and drink enough from the wire monkey mama to go back to the cloth mother. They would explore far more in the cloth mother's presence. So they would move away from the cloth mother for periods of time, but they spent most of their time in that room, close to the cloth mother, and would maybe explore their environment a little bit more in that area, okay? All of these monkeys that were separated were far more timid than normal. When they were integrated, they were more easily bullied. They were less socially intelligent. They had extreme difficulty mating. The females made terrible mothers themselves. Again, monkeys that were isolated for most of every day, but only for 20 minutes and spending time with other monkeys, ended up being normal, or very close to normal. This is a study that I think about a lot and that I present to groups a lot because it tells so much about people as well. Okay, regardless of how close you believe the link is, people are like this. And this is studied in humans all over the place as well. People raised in isolation with no human contact tend to struggle in many ways and actually hate themselves. Again, cutting behavior. Self-harm, things like that. Usually it's a problem of social isolation more than anything else. Often it's related to abuse. So I'm going to talk about attachment theory for a minute. Attachment theory was started by a psychologist named Bowlby, and basically he measured three types of interactions. Stick with me through this, okay? The more you understand the importance of what I'm talking about and the basics, the more you'll be able to influence other people in business. He basically measured three types of interactions. The first type of interaction he watched or observed, he observed a bunch of interactions and he noticed three patterns. Okay, the first pattern was, well, maybe I'll explain the experiment. So what he would do is he would take, I think it was 2-year-olds, and you can read this research online. I read it many years ago when I was doing my master's degree, but he would take infants or toddlers, basically two years old. And you would place them in a room with a parent figure. Usually it was the mum initially with the research, but this research has been done over and over again since then. And he would ask the mother to leave. The mother would leave the room and they would watch the child interact with the mother before they left, then watch the child when the mother left, and then watch the child interact with the parent when the mother came back. Okay? So three types of interactions. How are they interacting with their parent usually? When the parent leaves, when the parent comes back. This is what they discovered. This is the three patterns. The first pattern was that children would not really interact with their parent a lot. They would kind of ignore their parent throughout the process initially. When the parent left, they didn't show a lot of reaction. When the parent came back, they didn't show a lot of reaction. Now I'm talking about three of the extremes patterns that he saw, okay? Now, what he termed this was somebody who is detached. They emotionally, they weren't attached to people. These people grew up to be fairly cognitive, very little emotional intelligence in the extreme case, and they tended to struggle a lot in business and life and community. Okay, a second person that struggled a lot was measured, and what they would do is they would kind of come back and forth with the mother constantly. So sometimes they would push the mother away or the parent figure away. Sometimes they would snuggle up to the parent figure. And there was kind of like this push away, come back to me, push away, come back to me, consistently in the relationship. There were kind of highs and lows, emotional extremes consistently. When the parent figure left, the child often was inconsolable for a period of time. They just kind of went crazy. They screamed and cried and a whole bunch of things. However, when the parent came back into the room, they would often hit the parent or move away from the parent and then move close and then again move away and scream a little bit. And again, were not easily consoled even when the parent came back. And these children usually were really confused with their relationships in different ways. The third interaction between children, these toddlers and their parents, was really interesting. And there were other negative interactions. I'm just pointing out the three major interactions that you can start to see yourself in. So, for example, I avoid emotions. That's something I've always struggled with. It's something that I've gotten far better at in the last decade. But I fall into that first category where I kind of just ignore things. People think nothing affects me. That's just kind of how I come across because that's been my coping method for dealing with emotions ever since I was little. The third interaction was the healthy interaction. And again, this is an extreme one, okay? The third interaction was where a toddler would interact with their mom or the adult, the parent in the room, and they would go move it back and forth between them. So instead of playing by themselves like the avoidant kid or the emotionally distant kid or like the kid who's the emotional roller coaster kid, kind of interacting with their parents but in a negative way, screaming, pushing, I need you, go away. That person, the third kid, would move back and forth and interact with their parent. So sometimes they would just go up and then like show a toy, maybe snuggle with their parent for a few seconds or a minute or two, and then they would move away and explore their environment. And they would constantly kind of check in with their parent. When the parent left, the child was distraught for a period of time and calmed themselves. When the parent came back, the child interacted, usually for the first few moments or first couple of minutes, really closely to kind of make sure, hey, listen, you're with me again, this is happening, and then again, we'd go back to normal play. So that was a healthy interaction, okay? Why am I talking about this? Again, studies of how people interacted when they were 2 and 3 years old. 90, there was something like a 94% correlation, predictive correlation, where researchers could guess how that child would communicate with others later on, how they would relate to others later on, how they would parent their children. The point of this is that the way we have patterns, we all have relating patterns, and if you know what your pattern is for yourself, as well as knowing what other people's patterns are, you're going to be able to interact with people in a very useful level. For example, when I have a client who is very avoidant, like I was, and still struggle with in different ways, where they don't interact with their emotions a lot, I'm going to appeal to their logic or seem to appeal to their logic as I motivate them and influence them. Having said that, I'm going to be dropping emotional clues here and there because I know that their emotions are still there. I'm going to give you an example of this. With those that study with the kids who were emotionally distant from their parents, who kind of ignored things, they started measuring their heart rate, their pulse. They started measuring their brain activity, and this is what they found. Even though the children showed no outward signs of distress when the parent left the room, their heart rate went through the roof, and their brain activity went crazy. They went into this emotional fight or flight kind of response. They were just hiding it very well. Okay? So even though people seem really cognitive, they're really emotional. That's how we still are, and you can measure this in adults as well. If I'm interacting with somebody who's pushing and pulling constantly and needs constant focus, what I do is I actually distance myself somewhat from those clients and teach them skills on how to interact in healthier ways where they're not as needy of me. They realize they don't need a coach. They don't need a parent to be around all the time. They can do some things on their own. So I will interact with them and meet their needs when it's appropriate. And when I go, you know what, you can do this on your own, I let people struggle through it. Okay? And that's the way I interact with them. With the healthiest people that I know, it's a completely different interaction. So how I influence them, what appeals to them is completely different. So again, this is just an introduction to relationships to people saying, hey, listen, know these things exist, know these things are important, pay attention to them, and learn these about yourself and others. Pay attention to them consistently. No one is a complete Spock. No one shows no emotion ever. No one is the complete roller coaster, generally speaking, unless they're really struggling in life. Maybe you have a few family members or friends that way. Most people fall somewhere on the continuum near to middle, okay? Near to that healthy person. There are people on either side, but pay attention to that. Start being aware of that. Start asking yourself, for myself, am I more on the avoidant side, more on the roller coaster side? And what about my partner? What about my children? What about my parents? What about my family members? What about my friends? Start measuring these things. Now, listen, you're not a professional in this way. You're not going to get it perfect all the time. That's not the point. The point is to start getting it right more of the time and understanding it more so that it can be useful to you as you are starting to interact with people and communicate with them better.